Rabbi Ed comes to us from Temple Beth Shalom in Bozeman. He spent 20 years as a trial lawyer in Tallahassee, Florida, specializing in defending death penalty cases prior to attending rabbinical school. In addition to a law degree and rabbinic ordination, Rabbi Ed holds a master's degree in religion, and he has completed his coursework for a PhD in religions of Western antiquity, which includes early Judaism, early Christianity, and Greek and Roman religions from Florida State University. He is committed to the interfaith community in Bozeman and serves on the interfaith panel Talking with Neighbors, which meets on Wednesdays at noon at Beth Shalom.
Just first Wednesday of the month, actually. But, well, thank you. And it's always a pleasure to be here with so many good friends. Today I want to begin by speaking about Jobbik. Jobbik is an ultranationalist, fascist, neo-Nazi, racist, and anti-Semitic Hungarian political party. Like other Nazis, it has accused Jews of attempting to control the world. It's asked for a list of all the Jews in the Hungarian government. More worrisome, in the Hungarian parliamentary elections in April 2014, it received over 20% of the vote, making it Hungary's third largest party. Incidentally, one of President Trump's top aides, Sebastian Gorka, is a member of this party and often wears a medal he was awarded by the party. In any event, until 2012, one of Jobbik's leading members was a rising star in his late 20s by the name of Sziadnyád Szegedi, widely spoken of as its future leader. Some of the members of the party wanted to stop his progress. They had issues with him. And so they began doing opposition research and investigating his background to see whether they could find anything politically damaging about him. What they found was that his maternal grandparents were Jewish survivors of Auschwitz, and half of his family was killed during the Holocaust. It turned out that after Auschwitz, Szegedi's grandparents, who had been Orthodox Jews, decided to hide their identity completely. But thanks to his political colleagues, Szegedi now knew the truth about himself. He was a Jew. Well, on learning this, Szegedi resigned from the party and started finding out more about Judaism. He went to a local rabbi who at first thought he was joking. But he attended classes on Judaism and he went to synagogue. Many at first treated him as a leper, but he persisted. And today, he attends synagogue, keeps Shabbat, he has learned Hebrew. He calls himself David, and in 2013, he even underwent circumcision. When David first admitted the truth about his Jewish ancestry, one of his friends in the Jobbik party said, quote, "The best thing would be if we shoot you so you can be buried as a pure Hungarian." Another urged him to make a public apology. It was this comment, he says, that made him leave the party. Quote, "I thought, wait a minute, I'm supposed to apologize for the fact that my family was killed at Auschwitz?" As the realization that he was a Jew began to change his life, it also transformed his understanding of the world. Today, he says, his focus as a politician is to defend human rights for everyone. Quote, "I'm aware of my responsibility, and I know I will have to make it right in the future." David's story isn't just a curiosity. It takes us to the very heart of the strange nature of morality, and as you'll see, ultimately, to Passover. What makes us human is the fact that we are rational, reflective, capable of thinking things through. We feel empathy and sympathy. Even a newborn cries when it hears another child cry. We have mirror neurons in the brain that makes us wince when we see somebody else in pain. Homo sapiens is the moral animal. Yet, much of human history has been a story of violence and oppression and injustice and corruption and aggression and war. When we're good, we are a little lower than the angels. But when we're bad, we're lower than the beasts. So the question is not just what makes us moral, but also what, despite our morality, what makes humanity capable of being so inhumane? Plato thought that morality was based on knowledge. He said, if we know something is wrong, we will not do it. Aristotle thought that morality was habit, learned in childhood until it became part of our character. David Hume and Adam Smith, two of the giants of the Enlightenment, thought that morality came from emotion. And Immanuel Kant believed that it came through rationality. For Kant, a moral principle is one you're willing to prescribe for everyone. So lying can't be moral because you don't wish others to lie to you. All of these four views of morality, Plato's knowledge and Aristotle's habit, the Enlightenment's emotion, and Kant's rationality, have some truth to them. But these insights only deepen the question, if we have knowledge and emotion and reason, and they lead us to be moral, why do humans hate, harm, and kill? A full answer would take a lifetime, but the short answer is actually pretty simple. We are tribal animals. We form ourselves into groups. Morality is both the cause and the result of this. Towards people with whom we feel connected, we're capable of great altruism. But towards strangers, we feel fear, and that fear is capable of turning us into monsters. In Jonathan Haidt's amazing book, The Righteous Mind, he explains that morality, quote, binds and blinds. It binds us to others in a bond of reciprocal altruism, but it also blinds us to the humanity of those who stand outside the bond. It unites and divides, he says. It divides because it unites. Morality turns the I of self-interest into the we of the common good, but the very act of creating an us simultaneously creates a them, the people not like us. The great crimes of humanity have been committed against the stranger, the outsider, the one not like us. Recognizing the humanity of the stranger has been the historic weak point in almost every culture. The Greeks saw non-Greeks as barbarians. Germans called Jews vermin, lice, a cancer in the body of the nation. In Rwanda, Hutus called Tutsis inyenze, cockroaches. Dehumanize the other, and all the moral forces in the world will not save us from evil. Knowledge and facts are silenced, emotion is anesthetized, and reason is perverted. The Nazis convinced themselves and others that in exterminating the Jews, they were performing a moral service for the Aryan race. Suicide bombers are convinced they're acting for the greater glory of God. There is such a thing as altruistic evil. None of the great philosophers have cured the heart of darkness in the human condition. And that's why these two verses from the Hebrew Bible, which appear in the Bible just after the Israelites leave Egypt, blaze like the sun emerging from behind thick clouds. And those two verses are actually in your handout. And somebody who has those two verses, Exodus 22:20 and 23:9, if somebody will read that first verse aloud for us, somebody with a loud voice.
You must not mistreat or oppress the stranger in any way. Remember, you yourselves were once strangers in the land of Egypt.
And in the next chapter, somebody else.
You shall not oppress the stranger, for you know the feelings of the stranger, having yourselves been strangers in the land of Egypt.
These are remarkable verses. You see, because many Near East cultures required in their sacred texts care for the widow and the orphan. But the addition of the stranger, the foreigner, was radical beyond radical for its time. In fact, the command to love the stranger appears 36 times in the Torah, the Hebrew Bible, the most repeated verse. Yet when we talk about what the Torah today, we want to talk so much about what it says so little, and not so much about the Torah, what it says so much. The Torah here is confronting directly the fact that care for the stranger is not something for which we can rely on our normal moral resources of knowledge, empathy, and rationality. Sometimes we can. But under situations of high stress, when we feel our group threatened, we can't. The very inclinations that bring out the best in us, our genetic inclination to make sacrifices for the sake of kin, can also bring out the worst in us when we fear the stranger. We are tribal animals, and we are easily threatened by the members of another tribe. So these commands are given shortly after the Israelites left slavery in Egypt, and implicit in them is a very radical idea. Care for the stranger is why the Israelites had to experience exile and slavery before they could enter the Promised Land and build their own society and state. In other words, you will not succeed in caring for the stranger, implies God, until you yourself know in your very bones what it feels like to be a stranger. And this is where the Passover Seder, the way we observe Passover, becomes crucial. The Torah says, "Lest you forget this message about how we treat the stranger, I have commanded you to remind yourselves and your children of the taste of affliction and bitterness every year on Passover at the Seder." Passover is our annual reinforcement of this message. We literally internalize it in the foods we eat, the stories we tell, the rituals in which we engage, so that we could never forget that we were once strangers and what that feels like. To remind us of our roots, the Seder begins the story with the words in Aramaic, Arami Ovid Avi, which in most Seders you'll find translated as, "My father was a wandering Aramaean," saying we came from nowhere. But in modern parlance, since there's no country Aramea anymore, it's Syria, it would be better translated as, "My father was a Syrian refugee." We proceed to eat bitter herbs to internalize the bitterness of being oppressed. We dip herbs in salt water, reminding us of our tears. We eat charoset, a fruit and nut mixture, reminding us of the mortar we used as slaves. We eat matzah, a tasteless unleavened bread, better known as the bread of affliction. Families which have been separated come together to share and internalize the tastes and the smells and the feelings of both slavery and redemption. And Jewish tradition is emphatic that it's each person's duty to regard himself as if he has personally lived the experience of slavery and redemption, and if you've not, you've not done the Seder right. That tradition deeply understands that those who forget what it feels like to be a stranger, eventually, when times get hard, come to oppress strangers. Empathy, sympathy, knowledge, and rationality are usually enough to let us live at peace with others, but not in hard times. Serbs, Croats, and Muslims lived peaceably together in Bosnia for years until they didn't. Hutus and Tutsis lived peaceably in Rwanda for years until they didn't. And so did Jews and Palestinians before 1948 in Israel. The problem arises at times of change and disruption when people are anxious and afraid. And this is why extraordinary defenses are necessary, which is why the Torah teaches us to annually reenact about memory and history, things that go to the very core of our identity. We have to remember that we were once on the other side of the equation. We were once strangers, the oppressed, the victims. And remembering our past forces us to undergo role reversal. Especially in the midst of freedom, we have to remind ourselves of what it feels like to be a slave. So you may wonder, whatever happened to Sadnat, now David Shigeti? It was exactly that role. Role reversal. He was a hater who discovered that he belonged among the hated. What cured him of anti-Semitism was his role-reversing discovery that he was a Jew. That for him was a life-changing discovery. The Torah teaches us that the experience of our ancestors in Egypt was meant to be life-changing for us as well. Passover reminds us of this every year. Having lived and suffered as strangers, we must be the people commanded to care for strangers. I just want to note that a week from Tuesday is the community Seder that everyone is invited to, although tomorrow is the deadline to register. You can register on our website, bethshalombozeman.org.